Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears.
Well, hello everyone. It's Patricia of Alchemy Therapies and My Emotional Audit. And today I was really inspired by a lecture I watched last night by Ian McGilchrist, who is a philosopher, a psychiatrist, and author. He wrote the book, The Master and His Emissary. He's also got a new book out called The Matter with Things. But this was a talk he gave to McGill University in the US. He was a guest lecturer. It was a lecture that had only been given yesterday. And so it was pretty much uploaded almost immediately, and I watched it. It's an absolutely fascinating lecture. Ian is he's just such a knowledgeable man. He has a unique vision, I think, because he comes from philosophy as well as medicine. And so the humanities and the arts are also informing science. And I think it's that creative marriage, really, that creates a better, more holistic vision, perhaps. And I mean that in the original sense of the word, as a whole, than people who have been trained purely in science, which sadly, well, up until 18, I had a broad education. But at 18, I focused entirely on science because it was my desire to change the world through science. Little did I know at 18 that I had a very left brain view of the world. Okay. And that's really Ian's contribution. The book, The Master and His Emissary, is talking about the left and right hemispheres and how we misunderstand the importance of the right. The right hemisphere is our imagination, it's our intuition, it's our whole worldview. But before I get onto that, and my understanding and my interpretation of what he's saying in this lecture, and I may do more than one about this because it was so dense, and I probably won't have time to talk about it in the full depth that I would like to. It just chimes so many bells for me because I'm actually in the middle of writing both a book, which I've talked about before, which is about altered states and how one can access unconscious process in order to make patterning shifts, in other words, how your neurons fire in these complex patterns that we know occurs, which are called neural networks. They're related to implicit or emotional memory, and they change everything about you. If you've got past experiences that were overwhelming for you, you've laid down these memories as the way the world is. And it often undermines you in your adult relationships, and indeed everything in your adult life is reflected through the lens of your past experience, because the brain is just pattern matching to what it knows or interprets about the world that you're seeing. So there's no such thing as an objective reality. That's what I'm talking about at the moment in the book. I'm also delving into aspects of consciousness and changing consciousness through different methods, whether that's through breath work, psychedelics, or in my case, using trance-like instructions, which comes from hypnotherapy. It's nothing dangerous, it's nothing weird. You use eye movements, or sometimes you use audio or touch to stimulate parts of the brain that react to sense impression. So it's really talking, I think, to the implicit part of the mind, the one that takes in context. So the other thing that happened in the last few days was I got sent some various ideas for watching videos on YouTube, and one of them was about parts therapy. Dick Schwartz, or Richard, obviously is his full name, Richard Schwartz, but everyone calls him Dick. Dick Schwartz developed an idea of therapy called parts therapy, which comes from a sort of internal family systems view, which is that we've got these kind of disembodied parts of ourselves that are kind of at war with each other. So it's kind of linked to emotional memory, and that, say, something terrible happened to you at 13, okay? And at 13, you were completely overwhelmed and didn't know how to deal with it. It's like a part of your psyche splits off. It's a dissociative response and says, right, that's it. I'm having nothing more to do with relationships or whatever. And that part then will argue with other parts that say, we need to be loved and to connect. And so this is kind of the dialogue that parts therapy and internal family systems kind of enables people to explore. And it's really a very interesting dynamic. The proponents of IFS are very keen on it and say it's absolutely revolutionary. I've not trained in it, so I don't want to comment on that. I have worked with people who have done this kind of work, and it does seem to me that if you're very left brain oriented, you're very left hemispherically dominant, you can get a bit obsessed with your parts. And I'm not sure that coming into dialogue on your own is necessarily the way through. I do think you need to work with a therapist to help kind of pull back a little from that and see how to marry those parts well. Because ideally, what you're trying to do is get an agreement between different parts of yourself so that you can move forward and you're not stuck in these very defended positions. Okay, well, that was the part I didn't expect to go into. But anyway, that's what came up. And then into my YouTube algorithm, obviously, because I was looking at parts, came this lecture called A Medicine More Fit for Humanity. It's the John P. McGovern Lecture at Duke University 2024. And I thought, whoa, that title absolutely rings my bells. I often write about what's wrong with medicine. I didn't study medicine purely, but I did do the first 2 years, the same as medical doctors when I did biochemistry and physiology. I then went on to do a master's degree in medicinal nutrition. Oh, actually, it was called nutritional medicine, but it's the same thing. So I do have some understanding of medical training. I've not worked as a doctor, though, and I certainly wouldn't claim to be one. In fact, I would find that a very stressful occupation, given how left brain and analytical and kind of procedural it's become. And this is really, I guess, what Ian is talking about. So he starts with a brief introduction how he got into medicine. It was definitely his second career, if you like. He started off in English literature and then he went into philosophy. But he feels that we have lost something in our appreciation of the world by this dim, what's the word? Diminution, that's the word. It's a very hard one to say, of the importance of arts and humanities in a general education. And it's disappearing from school curricula. It's all technology now. Everything's technology. But if you have no appreciation of what makes a human, then technology starts to become all you understand. And you start to treat human beings like they were very complicated machines. Okay. And we lose what's implicit in the world in context. When you see something in its context, or a human being in its context, or a work of art in its context, or a landscape, or even, your relationships in context, this is what gives life meaning. You can't describe a poem, for instance, in technological terms. You can't, it doesn't do anything, but it has intrinsic meaning because of the way human beings integrate experience through their senses. And you feel something when you read a beautiful poem or see a work of art or gaze at a landscape or see nature and the wondrous and awe-inspiring features of it. So context is everything. That's what he's saying. And everything is relational. Its meaning is created by this relational dynamic between you and what you perceive. Okay, so and I think that's a really important understanding, that context can change the meaning depending on what surrounds it. So let's go back to perhaps the idea of the way the left hemisphere sees the world. Okay, so we've got a human brain which is very large, it's very well developed. It has two sides, the left and the right hemispheres, which overlay the middle parts of the brain, which are much more to do with emotional regulation and survival. All the automatic functions happen in the middle of the brain, but the left hemispheres are really where the left and right are really where your cognition, your thinking, your analyzing, your reasoning comes in, and it's the most complex part of the human brain. But we have tended as a society to become very left brain dominant. Now pop psychology, we've got to be very careful we don't get into pop psychology, because pop psychology tells you that the left brain, you know, is the fixer, if you like. Well, in a sense it is, but it's not reliable, okay? We used to understand that the left brain was sort of the reasonable and down to earth part of the brain. And we talk about left brain people, you know, as very practical and kind of reasoning. But the reality is, if you have a deficit in the right side of your brain, and the left hemisphere is therefore dominant, because the two kind of toggle on and off, like that's a way oversimplification, but one diminishes the other. They're meant to kind of work in tandem. So if you've got a right hemisphere issue, say you've had a stroke in the right hemisphere, the left hemisphere becomes dominant, and it does not recognize the right hemisphere at all. If you ask someone to draw a clock face and they have a right hemisphere deficit, they will draw only one side of the clock and they will think that is finished. They cannot perceive the other side of it, because the visual field crosses over into the opposite side of the cortex. So you will not see, because the right visual field is crossing over into the left. That one will be drawn, but the other side will not be drawn, because it simply is not represented, and the left hemisphere can't detect that there's anything wrong with that. So in a sense, the left hemisphere on its own is deluded in its representation of the world. And he's talked about this, I believe, much more in his latest book, The Matter with Things. We hardly ever see paranoid delusions that are caused by the opposite problem, where you have deficits in the left and you're only operating, or majority operating from your right. So the left hemisphere is not a great way to run a life. It's certainly not a great way to run a society, which everything is about. As he says, the left hemisphere is all about controlling things, all right, and grabbing them. It's about competition, not collaboration. It's about, what can I use this for? What can I do with it? Now, don't get me wrong, that's really important. I wouldn't be recording this video if I hadn't managed to choose the right software and get myself motivated to create this. So we do need it. But on its own, it sees everything as a tool. And what we can do with it and how we can manipulate it. And it made me think, well, is that the basis of narcissism? Because we hear all over the internet about narcissists and narcs, as they're called, and like they're suddenly here and we never knew about them before. Well, clearly narcissism is a trait. It's always been present. It's just that it's become a very popular term, and those of us who believe we have been the victims of narcissists are refusing to acknowledge the narcissistic traits in ourselves, which of course we all have, because it's part of human development, which is meant to complete, which often doesn't with narcissism. So I wondered if that was a deficit in the right hemisphere, and I can't get to ask Ian that, but if he ever watches this, maybe he'll respond. It's very interesting that we have these two sides that kind of are necessary for each other, but very complementary. They're very different, and that is conserved really from all mammals, this separation between left and right, and there must be a reason for that. Now, I've talked before that the corpus callosum, which is a band of neural tissue in the middle, has the importance of kind of uniting the two sides, and it's thicker in women. I talked about that a few weeks ago, I think. I wasn't claiming any special characteristic of women's brains. I was just saying they were different, and maybe that might be the basis of multitasking. But it is interesting that what Ian says is that the corpus callosum is basically inhibitory. So it's not always about trying to connect. It's sometimes about trying to keep separate, because these two parts of your brain have very important but complementary functions, and you don't want to necessarily replicate both in the opposite side. So it affects the way we see the world when our left brain is dominant and the right side is inhibited too much. It says it's about the way we pay attention. That's what he's saying. It's the way we pay attention to things. And attention is so key. It's not just cognition, it's not just thinking. It's about the way in which we dispose our consciousness, we use our consciousness towards the world. And it makes a huge difference both to what we find in the world, I'm quoting here, to what we find in the world and to who we are, of course. We who do the attending, it changes, he describes as the phenomenological world. And again, very difficult to say phenomenological, but there we are. How we perceive the world, all right? So left brain sees things as explicit, abstracted from context, so no context, disembodied. How many of us are going around disembodied, disconnected, feeling miserable? And everything is reduced to its parts. Now, of course, this has really huge implications for the way medicine is done in Western culture. And he gets onto that later in the lecture, but I think it's true of everything. We treat everything as if we can understand it by breaking it down into its constituent parts. And I was as guilty of that as anyone because I went into mainstream university education and I learned about bodies by dissecting them, and I learned about physiology by cutting things up and staining them, which of course has nothing to do with life. There's no life force in any of those objects. And I think that's one of the reasons why we misunderstood a lot of physiology, is because we don't observe real living things. So the right hemisphere, on the other hand, sees things as not fragmented, but never fully certain, uncertain, full of potential. And he says you could say that the left hemisphere narrows down to a certainty and the right hemisphere opens up to a possibility. And I just think that's a beautiful, beautiful quote. And, I'm all about transforming people into the realm of possibility away from certainty, because certainty, well, let's look at diagnosis, for instance, because this is another thing I am looking at the moment. I'm writing a presentation for the Chrysalis Effect for their CFS ME Awareness Week, which is next week, and I'm going to look at life beneath labels. All right, because let's look at diagnosis. So diagnosis, when you come with a chronic long-term set of symptoms that haven't gone away and they're just ramping up and getting worse and worse, you'll be given a diagnosis which will say, oh, this is chronic fatigue, or it's fibromyalgia, or it's chronic anxiety, or it's bipolar, or it's ADHD, whatever the label is, you'll be given that. And we tend to think that, well, the left brain will certainly grab onto that and go, okay, so this is what I have, this is the thing that I have, and now I need to fix it, because that's where the right brain goes to. It wants control. In fact, it seeks control. So people get very stuck in that because they can't control the uncontrollable. And it's very disconnected from the body that is actually giving these signals and saying, listen to me, listen to me, something's wrong here. And so we are in a state of disconnection from our bodies, and we don't know what to do about it. And it's profoundly life-shattering when that happens. It can be, honestly, it happened to me, so I'm talking through personal experience here, as well as all those experiences that I see daily in my practice. It shatters your worldview. It leaves you on the floor wondering what on earth has happened, because suddenly your body, after years of probably ignoring it completely, is starting to scream at you for reasons you don't understand. And I think if we could get into imagination, this is what I'm writing about, and get into a more implicit view of the world where creativity is the way out, by the way. That was another really fascinating talk I watched by Martha Beck, who's a US psychologist, and she was talking that the opposite of anxiety isn't calm, it's creativity. And she gives really good reasons for that, which maybe I'll do another podcast on that at some point. But getting out of this fixed nature and thinking, I have to fix this problem and I don't know how, and that drives this anxiety feeling, and then you're trying to deal with that and your body's screaming at you. No wonder people get very, very ill and very, very stuck. And then they go to the doctor and get this diagnosis, which appears to give them an answer, but in fact, it just keeps them labelled. And there is no solution in modern medicine, because modern medicine doesn't look at the whole being. It doesn't look at the mind and the body connection, which Ian very quite rightly says is absolutely vital. It just looks at you as a malfunctioning machine and says, well, we need to fix this and we need to fix that. Let's look at the symptom and suppress the symptom, which of course is the mind body's way of drawing attention to what lies beneath, which is usually experiences that you haven't fully processed. It's emotional. It's biopsychosocial. There are lots of other factors there. It's not just emotions, of course. It's nutritional, it's stress related, it's your life, it's everything. Just like you embody a whole, your life reflects you, and your body is the readout of your entire existence up to this point. And so he goes on to look at how the left hemisphere creates a representation of the world. It creates a map, if you like, which it may not present to the right hemisphere for sort of adjustment, for drawing out, for that wider view, for contextual information. And so it says we're broken, we're broken, we're unfixable, and we're never going to get well. And that's what happens. And so this map that it's producing is inaccurate, okay? It's actually not what the world is, but it's so compelling that we get stuck in it. And so not only do we get our own worldview, which is limited, but then that gets reinforced by the worldview of medical consultants and doctors who are trained in a very left brain way. None of them study the arts, for instance, or very few, I should imagine. In the UK, you can go straight into medicine from schooling without any intervening experience of the world. And so you go in with this idea that, yeah, I'm good at sciences, I'll do medicine. I mean, I was convinced I was going to do it for a while, and then I changed my mind at the last moment. But I knew nothing about the world. I knew nothing about people and their struggles. The only thing I knew about was my family and my existence. And so in other Western nations like the US, medicine is a secondary degree. I didn't know that. Ian taught me that, which seems to me a lot more sensible, that you'd have to study something else first and get some life experience before going to work with people who are suffering, real people with real suffering. And so, unfortunately, I think the result of medical training, and I've worked in medical education, I worked there for 8 or 9 years, is this reductionist, parts-oriented, technological interventionist way of looking at a human being in illness. And the difficulty with that isn't just seen in the way patients get treated, it's also in the mental health issues that are absolutely endemic in the medical profession, because you're not getting to exercise your human given qualities of intuition, of observation, of judgment. All you are is a technician who fills out forms, test forms, gets results, and recommends the appropriate medication. And so there's no connection with your patients. And I think we're all suffering as a result of that. You become quite sterile in some ways, very detached and isolated. It's a tragedy that we run medicine like this, when the history is so different, you know, that scientists were often philosophers, Doctors were trained in so many other things so that they had a broader world view. So I think it's worth reiterating then that we are a complex system, and as such, we need complex, nuanced solutions to this issue. And I am very much keen to work with people who want to explore those depths of being that maybe they haven't had up to now because they've been focused on what's wrong with them rather than what they need to perhaps learn about themselves. So anyway, I will be carrying on with my analysis next week, I think, because this is such an important topic. But if any of that interests you, you can find me on alchemytherapies.co.uk, or you can find me on patriciawarby.com, which is my general education writing authorship site. So take care, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Be good out there, and see you soon. Bye for now.
Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.